Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm excited to have Michael Dodsworth here. He is a founder, CEO of Fanfare, and it's been a long time in the tech community building software for Salesforce, Search, Optimizely, and I'm just learning about how AI and data is affecting all of us fans out there. But Michael, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? And I'm really interested to learn more what you're doing and to help all of us.
Sure, it's great to be here. And yeah, it's been a long journey to get here. I still feel young at heart, but I feel like I'm wearing my age at this point. But as you mentioned, I come from an engineering background, as you can tell from the accent. I'm not from around these parts, so I'm based in LA right now, but I grew up in the UK. And I found myself on these shores through acquisitions, luck, hard work. In certain areas, I went through my kind of Goldilocks tours of company sizes. So I went from a very small company to being scooped up by Salesforce back in 2007. So I went from like a 7-person startup to whatever Salesforce was in 2007. Did the large company thing for a few years, worked on some really gnarly distributed systems problems and some real issues of scale that I think provide a foundation for what I'm doing now at Fanfare. And as you say, I moved to a medium-sized company, Optimizely, just down the road from Salesforce. And that's when someone from my past came up to San Francisco to talk me through this company, Rival, which was, as the kind of name suggests, we were a little on the nose with the name. We were going after the likes of Ticketmaster, any kind of ticketing vendor, incumbents that have been around for decades, and trying to, you know, be meaningful competition in an area that's just been lacking meaningful competition for such a long time. And then fast forward to the start of the pandemic, we were scooped up by Ticketmaster. And I found myself in this kind of frustrating scenario where all of the problems that we'd been trying to address at Rival, in particular, this scenario where you have a Taylor Swift presale and you have millions of people showing up all at once, bots, bad actors, and that horrendous consumer experience that we've all sat through and found painful, like it's almost a tax on you going to live events. Having spent some time trying to fix those problems, feeling like I kept seeing these problems again and again, like not just in ticketing, but in retail, in collectibles, in fashion and apparel, like I'm an aspiring sneakerhead and seeing it time and time again. Every time there's a sneaker drop, there's frustration from consumers. So that's how Fanfare came about, just to help retailers deal with this problem and try and fix this issue for all the fans out there, for all the consumers that have been through painful queuing experiences to try and rid the world of that pain.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. There's a concert you want to go to and you're like right there, ready to go. And then all of a sudden it's sold out. You're like, how's that even possible? And what I'm learning now is like all these bots are out there buying the tickets. And then they just, like you said, it's a tax. They just charge more on these resale sites. So yeah, like maybe you could talk a little bit about like how do you solve that? What are they doing and how do you solve that? And how's AI helping them, helping you, helping the good guys or helping the bad guys?
Yeah, I think that like stepping back and thinking about why this happens, like you've created an enormous incentive for people to come in and try and get these at what is like much lower than market price value. Like you're selling a ticket for $200 that you know you can sell for maybe $2,000 on the secondary market presents an enormous opportunity for people to come in and arbitrage. And that's what people do. They'll go through great pains to create bots, to set up bots and run them to try and grab these things. And again, that happens in sneaker drops. It happens anytime anything scarce goes on sale. Swift 2s, for example, recently, Ariana Grande tickets, same thing happens. And the approach that we've taken is like just trying to engage this as a problem that we tackle in layers, right? Do the very simple things to try and identify people as real fans, whether that's through some historical information that we can pull, whether it's based on your behavior previously or maybe in the actual queue itself. Try and provide ways that people can provide feedback that identify them as a real person. And then just layering up, like if we're not sure that you're a real person at that point, like gradually ramping up how invasive these kind of checks are, trying to be as minimal as possible, but just layering on various approaches to try and weed out the bad actors. And I would say it's increasingly difficult. Like the tooling has gotten significantly better. If you want to create a bot or run a bot, it's become easier in the last 24 months. And it's not something that even the most well-resourced organizations like a Ticketmaster, like a Best Buy, like all of these giant retailers can get their arms around. So for us, it's let's take that challenge on for you. Let's use our expertise, constantly running events like this, identifying behaviors that identify bots, and let us take this challenge on for you.
So why I've noticed too, like they first you wait, then they put you in a queue room, and then once you're in the queue room, then you get to go buy the ticket or something. Like, is because are they doing background checks on you, or are they trying to, what is all that process about?
Ticketing is interesting because it's a really difficult problem once you get out of the end of the queue, which is there's only a certain number of seats available. Like maybe there's 70,000 seats available. If you had a few million people all pile in to a seat map and all frantically click on that seat map as quickly as they can, that's an appalling process. Like that's going to immediately cause problems to all kinds of things and all kinds of people. So you try and meter people through that process gradually to avoid that contention. But there's all kinds of things you can do whilst you're in that holding area to capture information that would smooth that process through on the other side. So for example, like I want to give you information about what I'm willing to spend, how many seats I'm looking for, what dates I'm available for. And then have that information then pull you into a process more quickly and efficiently than just this free-for-all that happens once you get to the end of that line. And I found myself in that line. I was in the UK when Oasis went on sale, and I was on there, like many people in the UK were on there, and they just threw up a queue in front of all of the UK's Ticketmaster purchases. Like you could have been going to Legoland on a weekend and you found yourself in line. Like it's an incredibly painful process that kind of it's there to try and avoid some of the gnarly issues that happen when, that amount of traffic hits them and they're not set up to scale to deal with that kind of traffic volume. And then just the problem at the other side of the fence, which is like this highly contended, limited SKU purchase and experience that they have to provide to the users.
So how does fanfare solve some of these problems?
So capturing that information up front, like you have people waiting, like they're more than happy to give you information if it makes that process smoother and cleaner. Like I say, if there's a particular colorway or size that I want, maybe a couple of sizes that I would like to have, like that improves the whole experience because I can move people forward in line. I can shuffle people around. And then I think managing the wait list and moving people around in that wait list. So if we can identify you as a huge fan of Taylor Swift, then maybe we can move you forward in line. If you're a loyal member of, if you've engaged with the brand significantly in the past, then we can move you forward in line because you've spent that time and effort with the brand before. And I think just providing transparency into what's happening in that process, there's a feeling like I went in to buy tickets. It told me there was 500,000 people in line ahead of me, whatever that means. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? What are my chances? That's all I really care about. And then I see those things immediately available in the secondary market. I feel like the process isn't fair, right? So I think it's ruling out the bots and bad actors. It's providing some transparency into what is going on with the process and allowing you to opt out of the process if you feel like the return on investment for you is just not worth it, right? I'm going to spend 4 hours in this line and there's a very slim chance of me getting the thing. Then I'm going to add myself to the wait list and maybe I'll come back in a few weeks.
And how are you using AI to help with some of this, or?
Yeah, well, I'm extensively using AI myself in building this. I feel like, especially the last few months, the pace of development has increased pretty substantially, I would say. On the product itself, like identifying bots and bad actors, there's some more traditional machine learning going on in there. In terms of generative AI, we are exploring some ways of being able to build an experience for brands in a way that's like very prompt oriented. They can just go in, set things up, and just have AI generate the experience for them. So we're doing some work there too.
And what does it mean to generate the experience for them?
Yeah, so this would be, let's say you have, let's pick Tiffany's, for example, right? They have a product launch coming up. It's Black Friday, and they want to do some launch of some particular item for the holidays. So they can go in, they can provide a prompt, they can provide imagery for the assets, they can give a general vibe for the experience they want to create and how they want it structured. So I want my hero at the top. As people scroll down, I want to have some more imagery of the product and some more details. And then underneath, I want the whole checkout process. So I can go in there and prompt for that to happen. I can see generative AI go in there and start laying out components. I can go in there and tweak it. And like I'm doing something that's pretty sophisticated, but in a very simple, efficient way that people on the marketing team can just go in and create a compelling experience. They don't have to engage like a whole dev team or consultancy to do this for them.
Yeah, that's great. And what are the bad actors doing? How are they using AI to make us all unhappy not getting our tickets or having to spend so much more money?
Yeah, I think it's try and find ways of circumventing whatever guard you put in place. And I think AI has definitely put that in reach of more and more people. If you were developing these things in the past, like you had to do some actual exploration yourself, you had to be savvy enough to be able to go in and code this up yourself, where we're seeing more and more people just having a bot go in and find various ways of exploiting the system. And then just have something just they can go in and they can code things even if they don't have the experience to do that and run things that they wouldn't normally do. So we definitely see that. We've seen like even an example like OpenAI to give out their merch, they actually set up a Shopify store and then they made that internally available to all of their like staff and employees. And I think it took a couple of drops for them to find exploits in that system. And then they were sharing links and they eventually took down their own internal store when this merch became available, just because they'd find ways to circumvent the system internally. So it's just becoming easier for people to create more and more sophisticated bots. And like I say, captures aren't sufficient, all of the mechanisms that people would put in place to try and screen these people out is getting it's getting harder and harder. So it's definitely a problem that we see getting more difficult for especially smallish brands to be able to put their arms around and solve. So that's absolutely where we come in.
Yeah, I was reading one of your blogs and how, yeah, the AI bots that are coming in are they actually can answer it more accurately and faster than a human. So I am not a robot. I'm a human. Just that it's better. The bots are better
That's
than the
true.
humans
That's right. Yeah,
with
we've all had
AI.
that experience where you see identified the blocks that have traffic lights in them, and there's
Yeah,
one
I think
tiny.
there's always one questionable one. Is it really
Right.
a traffic light or not?
Absolutely.
That's crazy. And then what, like you talked about, I know you work with like influencers, and maybe this is all new terminology for me. So like you create this scarcity, these drops, and maybe you can share some things around these techniques, and then and how you guys play into that and help the end user or the customer experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think this model of a product drop and the use of scarcity, it's not something that's new. It's something that's, whether it's flash sales, Black Friday is a good example. Like, we all gravitate towards the things that are hard to get, right? That are scarce. That's just human nature. It's not something you can switch off. What we're just seeing is more and more tools are available for brand marketers, for retailers, to be able to use scarcity in interesting ways. And I think Gen Z and the prevalence of social media means that you can build up enormous audiences and then channel them through to some experience. So you see people who have large followings. I think any Kardashian-led brand is a great example of this. You can target millions of people who are loyal fans of you and your story and your narrative through to some experience. So the work with influencers is twofold. Some influencers have built up an enormous audience that they want to monetize. They see they have merchandise that they want to put out in the world, but they don't necessarily know how to do that. It's a painful process to try and set something up that's going to allow them to run an experience smoothly, given their audience size. And then there's the use of influencers with more traditional brands. So brands that bring in an audience by using influencers to bring along their audience. Another really interesting example, there's a soap manufacturer called Dr. Squatch in LA that did a collaboration with Sydney Sweeney, where it was Sydney Sweeney infused bathwater soap. And like, such a weird collaboration to do, like confounding, weird, spiky, unusual, but massively oversubscribed. They eventually started selling on eBay for £2,000, I believe.
Wow.
Their servers fell over just because of the sheer volume of traffic, but it got people interested in what the brand was putting out there. So it's definitely a tool that we see more and more brands reaching for. It's an incredibly powerful tool, but it also comes with all kinds of hazards and potential ways of frustrating your fans that you want to avoid. So that's where we come in again, try and make sure that the consumer experience is a good one.
Yeah, you can have a, like you said, just this amazing successful campaign, but then your systems and can't handle it. And so what is the process to like work with Fanfare? What do you do? Is it all custom, or you have a framework, or you do both, or how do you make this thing scale and have a good fan customer experience?
So we do integrate into some existing e-commerce platforms. So Shopify is a good example. So if you have a Shopify store, you can just flip the switch, turn on Fanfare, and then you can go and create your experience end to end through the Fanfare service. So that means you can set up announcements that go out from us. You can set up like who gets those announcements, which channels. You can create segmented audiences that come into
Okay.
that experience at different times. So I want to make this particular product available to my VIPs at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, and then everyone else at 11 a.m. Monday morning. That kind of thing you can just all create and choreograph way ahead of time and just let Fanfare manage all of the people through that process. And then we provide components that can either drop in to your existing product page. So we can just replace part of your product page so you can see a product drop or an auction or an appointment system, and we'll just live within your experience. Or to that generative AI experience, like you can craft something through Fanfare, and then we'll host that entire experience and scale up and do all the things you need to do to run the experience.
Oh, that's interesting. So I didn't realize you had a whole platform, and so you can handle the scaling as well. So it's a whole platform to set up, have different channels, and then you can turn on, I guess, the ability to handle large scale transactions and
Yeah, this is absolutely from my Salesforce Optimizely and then Rival days. This is a really nasty problem to try and deal with, this enormous surge in traffic that comes your way when you run an event like this, and then keeping it efficient when that traffic dissipates. You can't be peak expense just in case you have 3 million people show up. So it's woven into everything we do, like
So how do
everything that
you
we
do it,
build.
like without giving away secrets, but like how do you do that? How do you handle that?
There's a lot of heavy lifting happening on the engineering side to make sure that all of these pathways are kept as clean as possible. There's a lot of distributed compute in there, so we push as much as we can out to the edge so we can turn traffic around as close as we can to the clients themselves and keep the APIs up and running. And then all of the kind of good hygiene stuff that if you didn't do at Salesforce, you would be in trouble really quickly, just shedding load, throttling traffic, like all of those metrics and things that you want to push out to various places to keep on top of this. It's a really difficult, challenging thing to do, and it's incredibly challenging if you've not woven that into the product from the beginning. Like I've definitely seen that in platforms like Ticketmaster. I'm sure whatever's backing some of the large older retailers is a system that's creaking at the sides even under normal load. And then you throw 3 million people at it, like they know what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen. It just, the wheels fall off in all kinds of spectacular, unexpected ways. And it's not something that's easy to just, you can't tack on scalability. It's something that has to be built into the entire product. Otherwise, it doesn't function. So that's what we've tried to do here is make sure that we know that we're tackling this problem for brands and for retailers. So it needs to be capable of spinning up quickly, dealing with those surges in traffic, because that's the whole goal of the system.
So I'm assuming that you guys maybe just grab all this data, but then you batch it up and then integrate with the large retailer or the other e-commerce sites. Is that because you don't want to put a load on their systems if they can't handle it? Is that like something that you do or?
Yeah, we'll meter people through to whatever backing system they have. So again, Shopify is a good example of this, where if Shopify sees a large amount of traffic hitting checkout, they will throw you into a queue. If you've set things up, they'll throw you into a queue that you just didn't expect to be there. And it will be an hour-long queue for your customers.
Oh my gosh.
And the brands that we talk to, maybe they have a viral moment that they didn't expect. Maybe it's something that just has a little bit more anticipation than they didn't expect their consumers to be now stuck in something that is painful for them. And like I say, it's all around checkout. So long as you can meter people through to that more painful, more taxing, challenging part of the process, then you're in a good place. If it's hosted by us, we manage the entire process. So we'll just make sure that everything scales up, that everything is smooth and everything stays live, and all of the metering through is done by us.
So what does your tech stack look like?
It's a mixed bag, actually. We do have a sprinkling of Rust in there for the very highly contended parts. There's a lot of management of ephemeral stuff in memory. So there's some Redis goodness sprinkled in there. There's some KV stuff that lives at the edge to make this efficient. So layers of caching, a lot of stuff that is deliberately stays clear of the database, for example, like as much as we can avoid hitting something that's not easy to scale up, we will. So yeah, there's some rust in there just to tighten up some of those highly contended loops. There's a lot of TypeScript in there. There's some Kotlin sprinkled in there too. That's a little bit legacy and some of more of my past. But yeah, it's a mixed bag. I think we've tried to select the right tool for the job, always with the fact that we're dealing with these surges in traffic in mind.
I'm curious, what's your point of view of leveraging AI coding tools to continue to build out your platform? What's your experience been like?
So I was definitely an early adopter. I got hold of Cursor before it was popular, and I saw promise, but it was more of a curiosity at the time. The autocomplete was the thing I found to be most useful, and it was usually just small code edits. This was probably 18 months ago, maybe less than that. But I definitely saw promise in it, and I kept on top of how these things were evolving, how you should use them, how you should not use them. And it's gotten to the point now, I think with Claude Code, when that dropped and the last go around with the models, like it's most of the writing of the code is done by a model at this point. Like for sure, there's still a human in the loop and we're still reviewing everything, but like the actual typing is deferred to a model. And there's a lot of just back and forth with the model just to flesh out an idea or just rubber duck on an idea, which is incredibly helpful to me. So it's pretty incredible how much pace has increased over the last, especially the last 6 months. We've been using it extensively for coding, but I used to also use it extensively outside of coding too. There's a lot of marketing material to tweak and improve. That first page problem I find for writing is incredibly helpful just to back and forth that. The final tweaks absolutely go to a person, a human, to put finishing touches on, but to try and work through my thoughts, I find it incredibly useful to work with a model on that.
Yeah, that's great. So is it writing scalable distributed production code for you, or are you working on ideas, prototyping, but then you have your own kind of algorithms that, or how does that work for you?
I mean, it's usually just, like I say, back and forthing on what tools are available, what do the APIs look like, and just fleshing out an idea. But then it's really just,
Then you code the final production code.
it's more using it to type the code that I intend to write.
Okay.
Like I'm directing it to write particular things that are in my head. It's not like it's been left to architect whole systems. It's not like it, really architecting anything. It's just
It's like an
going through
apprentice
the
writing the
design.
code, but you're thinking through the flow and the architecture and
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think for things like, small refactoring tasks, or even large refactoring tasks, like being able to map out exactly what I want the refactor to do, like exactly what the problem is and exactly how we're addressing it, going through the process of identifying all the places that need to be updated, how those things are going to get updated, and then
which is
kicking
very
things off.
tedious and yeah.
Like I don't think you would go through that process, or it would certainly draw your attention away from something more important and like functionality that you want to build or something more critical. But it's definitely going to improve the life of the engineers. It's going to
Yeah.
make things easier to debug in future. Like those kind of things are, again, like I don't think you would take those things on, especially at an early stage startup, but you can just kick things off in the evening, disappear off for lunch and come back. And like a good chunk of it's done, you just need to go through the review process. That's a huge improvement.
And what do you think the future of software development is with AI coding?
Yeah, I'm excited by like I found I'm more excited to be building than I have for a little while just because it's taken away some of that tedium.
Yeah.
Like I can focus more on the higher level design. I can focus more on the stuff that's interesting, like the more complex things, like
Yeah.
the more laborious, like CRUD-based stuff that it
Yeah, it's just
doesn't, it's not
work. It's
taxing.
just, yeah.
It can do that for me. Like I think we've always tried to push that out to something else, and it's usually been like some magical framework, right? We'll try and not code all of that stuff because it's painful. I think being able to push that out to an agent or a model to do that coding for me, and then I can review it and I can see it, I think that's a better approach than just the magical framework that occasionally falls over and you've no idea why. So I think it's definitely improved, I guess, how it's made it more engaging to me or more exciting for me to be building. I don't know where it goes in 24 months. I feel like these agents are more and more capable, and I'm stepping up each time there's a new model. I kind of step up and out of something, and it can run for longer and longer than it would have done. So I don't know. 24 months from now, I think we're going to be building large chunks of functionality using these tools.
Yeah, and you'll still have your, it's a collaborator, it's part of the team, it's not the team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like I don't like will you ever get to it'll be the team, because that's where like magic, like what you do and some other a lot of other architects do. It's that creative thinking to solve that problem, but it's a lot of work because you have to do work to realize that vision. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely a tool that enhances, not replaces.
Right. It's a
So
collaborator. And
it
okay,
is.
you need to get the word out. I need to get the word out because a lot of people aren't telling their kids to study computer science. No, writing software, solving problems is such a rewarding, creative process.
Absolutely.
And these are just new tools that will help you realize solutions. But yeah,
Yeah,
I always
and I
get
think
discouraged when I hear that. I don't know. What's your point of view there?
yeah, I would love to be learning with these tools available to me. Like, I think there's a lot of focus on it solving problems, coming up with answers to problems, but like actually working through something and trying to understand it, like it's been incredibly useful for that kind of thing.
Yeah,
Like, I
that's a
was going through a
collaborator.
problem. Absolutely. I was going through there was a type issue yesterday that I remember going through, and there was some very esoteric type in someone else's library, and I stared at it for it must have been a few minutes. It made no sense to me whatsoever. I think in normal circumstances, I might have moved on, or maybe I would have tried to do some Googling and trying to like eventually work my way. But like, I could ask an agent to try and break that problem down into like smaller chunks that I could interpret, and like eventually I understood exactly
Yeah.
how that whole thing was layered up, and I feel like I learned something about the type system. There's all kinds of things that fell out of
I
that
love it.
that was helpful.
Yeah, I love that. And I like how Anthropic's even like marketing and promoting that because it's like it's a collaborator. It's not replacing, like you just collaborated with it to learn, figure something out, expand. I love that. I love hearing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
the way to look at it.
Yeah. And even just having it go away and look at tools that are available in a particular space. Like, I feel we would all go away and we would all, you
Yeah,
know,
what
hit
a time sink.
Google and go through a
Yeah.
painful process. Like, it's nice to have something do that for you and then just have a summary of results that you can go
Yeah.
through and dig
Yeah.
more into.
Love it. Yeah, review it and then you make the critical decision and explore more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, love it. Is there a question I didn't ask you that you wanted to share?
I think an interesting question is not just online experiences. We've all been through painful in real life experiences. I guess the question would be, are you helping out those kind of things? Like, why am I still stuck in a 4-block line for the Apple iPhone to go on sale? Like, why are you doing anything around those processes?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so we're trying, like, we're pushing on the in real life stuff too. It's a cliche that an English person's obsessed with queuing, but here I am. But yeah, again, that same painful process.
Yeah.
We've worked with brands before where they've had lines around the block in residential neighborhoods. They had the police come in and have to shut these things down because fights have broken out and there's security issues and so on. Thinking about how we can improve the in real life queuing and product drop experience, and try and going back to my old rival days of thinking about these communal events where you bring people together. I think there's interesting stuff that we can do there too. More to watch in this space. I think we've got an interesting approach that
How do
we
you
have
approach
a.
that? Like, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I think layering on tech and having some, rather than just have a giant line where people will camp out overnight and then there's all of the pain associated with that, bring people together. Have them point their phone up to the sky at a particular thing, enter an experience in the moment, and having people find out in that moment whether they've been successful or not. Like, having a countdown that's consistent across a crowd of 70,000 people, I think, will be really compelling. So,
Yeah, that's a whole different experience than what you just said there. You know, that.
I think it's a really compelling thing to do for conferences, for retail experiences, for pop-ups,
Oh yeah.
but eventually want to get back all the way back to
That's
stadiums.
pretty. That general idea sounds pretty creative, and like you can do some really interesting experiences. What you said, like bringing everyone together, a lot of people in some conference or concert, and in a shared moment.
Absolutely.
How about circling back? Okay, you're going to distribute people, queue them, not queue them up, but time frame them up. No more long lines. You're going to get the product you want, and maybe go to a bunch of different locations, or how are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, with the experience we had for this, the brand that had the security issues, is we set them up with an appointment system. So you could show up at their booth or at their store, you could scan a code, you could pick a time, and then you could go off into the world and do whatever you wanted to do. And then you had an assured point in time that you could come back and essentially walk straight through.
Yeah, that's
Like no
awesome.
more,
Yeah,
yeah,
don't
no
need all
more
your
lines.
information. Just here's your time to go get your product and you're done.
Yeah, like
That would be
we
amazing.
want, yeah, like why is it that you have to spend all that time in line? Like, why
So
can't
painful and
you?
aggravating.
Yeah, absolutely. So pick a time, go grab a coffee, go have a bite to eat, come back, walk straight into the store, buy your thing, and you're done. That's a much cleaner experience. Yeah, I think again, if there's much more interesting stuff we can do with that experience. There's all
Oh,
kinds of
yeah.
places that you see these painful experiences in real life. So I'm excited for
That'd be great if Fanfare does some things around there. Me as a consumer, I would love that.
it.
I mean,
Absolutely. Yeah, me as a consumer too.
there's a
Every
lot of
time I
pain
see
out
this,
there. It's so
absolutely.
frustrating.
Yeah, I'm a pained consumer. Like, this is where this all comes from is like, why hasn't this been solved? Why
Yeah.
is this still painful? And then having spent some time on the other side, oh, okay. This is why it's painful. This is why retailers haven't solved this problem before. Let me try and fix that for them.
Yeah, that'd be great. Now, this is a little side, but just thinking about experiences, have you looked at the new Meta display glasses?
I saw the demo. I've looked at a few videos of them. I think any kind of experience where you can like overlay something and put something in front of people is really interesting. Yeah, I haven't thought too much about that, but I think overlaying some experience into the real world is
Yeah.
really compelling. Like I was
Because
just at
that's
a conference.
transactional too, like you can, anyway, there's pro and or at a concert or
Yeah.
something.
Yeah, I saw there was a booth, a conference that was just that, where they had a giant display set up and it was like a transparent LCD or OLED display. And they had it for I believe it was for Lucid, where enormous display, you could go in there and you could spec the car, you could change the colors, you could go and look at the interiors. And it was essentially just a life-size version, just in the store, in a space with everything around it. It was very slick. So yeah, anything where you can augment the real world and add kind of content and richness to it, I think is interesting. So yeah, if there's something we can do there, I think we're going to explore it.
Yeah, an old chief creative officer for us, he started a company and he made some pictures for me, photo or paintings. And then right now it's just like the iPhone, you point it at the painting and there's an RFID there. And then the whole painting comes alive with music and motion. And it's really cool. And okay, I'd rather just have that in my glasses too.
Yeah, I can see like wayfinding in particular. I can see it
Oh,
was
yeah.
incredibly useful. Like going into a stadium and not knowing like which direction I'm supposed to go in, like all of that things could be layered on top of what you're seeing. It would be
Now,
really
will you guys
useful.
work on that, or you're maybe sticking to some of the other things we were talking about?
Yeah, I think augmenting real world, I think we've done some work with an AR experience, but very much targeting the phone
Yeah.
initially. But like you say, there's m many ways you can augment a space, whether that's a transparent display, people's phones, some kind of display technology that they wear. There's all kinds of things you can do. So I'm sure we'll explore it. I'm sure it'll come up. Yeah, I think as the technology gets more sophisticated and
Yeah,
compelling,
especially
I'm
with when
sure.
you talk about your physical shopping experience, especially with big drops, and there's just can be getting easier and easier. I love it. I love what you're working on. I didn't fully understand. Now I understand a lot more. I hope I give you Godspeed. Please code faster and solve some of these problems because it's just so aggravating, some of these experiences.
Yeah, anytime I end up in an experience like that, and we talk to people where there's just a long tail of these experiences, like people who want to book a swim meet for their kids, or people who want to go camping at a particular campsite that's oversubscribed, or people wanting to go to the hot new restaurant, all the same problem.
Yep.
All like scarce resources going through a terrible consumer experience where
Yep.
people feel pain. So all of those, I think, are good candidates for this.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm a huge camper, and during COVID, everyone decided to be campers too. And so all my favorite spots I could never, you can't get in. And it's like a concert ticket. And then I was using some shareware that basically would keep pinging the site, and then it would text me when a spot opens with a URL, and I have to click it right away to get into a state park here in the US. And but thank God for software, otherwise I wouldn't be able to camp at all my favorite sites.
Yeah, we've done some work with our waitlist management for things like this, where if you just miss out, we keep your place in line, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you didn't get in this time, but you were really close. You are probably first in line the next time. So you don't have this free-for-all where when it goes on sale again, it's just pandemonium every single time. It doesn't matter how many times you've tried, how many times you've woken up in the middle of the night to try and get your restaurant reservation, like it doesn't care. Like that, I think, should
Oh,
go
that's
away
nice.
too.
So you're building some of that in where you may have missed out this time, but we'll get you front of line next time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good feature. Very nice. If people want to get in touch with you, Michael, how can they do that?
I'm always open to talk about any of this stuff. If you have some creative ideas about drops you want to run or experiences you want to see, please reach out. LinkedIn is the place you can always find me for my sins. Please schedule some time. Always happy to talk about this. We do have a set of blog articles and case studies for people who want to find out what they should and what they should not do around drops, what's worked for brands in the past. If you go to fanfare.io/blog, you'll find all kinds of interesting content on there.
Amazing. Michael, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank God you are trying to solve some of these problems. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you.